Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Arlie Gordon with the National Black Teen Empowerment Expo and Unity Design. And as always, I'm honored to be your host for tonight's broadcast. This show is produced by acclaimed historian, educator, and author, Leslie Gist Etheridge, and serves as our weekly live online discussion to celebrate the African-American experience by honoring all the people, past and present, black and white, who with faith and focus are preserving our rich history through literature, the arts, and the humanities. And as always, we thank you for joining us tonight, and we'd love to have you be a part of tonight's discussion by calling in with your comments or questions to 347-324-5552. Again, that number is 347-324-5552. Now, let's get right into it. As a kid, I loved comic books, especially Marvel and characters like Spider-Man, the Incredible Hulk, and Silver Surfer. But the two comic book characters I loved the most and who really made my pride fly high were Black Like Me, Luke Cage, Hero for Hire, and the Black Panther. So tonight, I'm excited as enthused to have with us the renowned cartoonist Dawood Anya Wale, and he's going to help me pronounce his last name. Firstly, Mr. Anya Wale is an Emmy Award-winning graphic artist whose work can be seen on MTV, Nickelodeon, the Cartoon Network, TNT, and NBA TV. He is the creator of the legendary comic book series Brother Man, Dictator of Discipline. Dawood, so that I don't mispronounce your last name without you correcting me first, thank you for joining us tonight on The Gist of Freedom is Faith.
Thank you. Glad to be here. I appreciate it.
It is indeed an honor. Now, let's get your name correct for our listening audience.
Okay, it's Dawood Anya Wale.
Anya Wale, just the way it's spelled. I'm sorry, good brother.
That's all right.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, there is a Black comic book event taking place at Human Bookstore in Harlem, correct?
Yes, that one I don't have all the details on because I'm actually going to be at Virginia Tech doing a presentation on Tuesday. But the what's going on up there, I don't really have all the information. I will not be in attendance there.
I thought that you were going to be a part of that, and that's why I wanted to plug that event for you.
Okay.
Now let's get right into it. What inspired you to become a graphic artist?
Well, actually, it goes way back to my childhood. You know, I've been into, I'm 46 this year. So, you know, going back to, like, early 70s, and, you know, I always had an interest in drawing. You know, like you, I had my comic collection. You know, I had my Luke Cage, my Black Panther. I was collecting, like, Marvel comics, like, from, like, third grade on up to, like, maybe, like, sixth or seventh grade. But also, like, had an interest in, like, Mad Magazine, because my older brother had that. And just drawing, period, you know, I just always liked to draw, even if it wasn't comics. You know, I would just draw my family, my friends, and I knew that was something I always wanted to do. By the time I got to high school, I was a fine arts major, throughout high school, you know, just learning fine art, figure drawing, gesture drawing. And then after that, you know, I continued by pursuing, you know, just entrepreneurial ventures like airbrushing shirts, silkscreening shirts throughout the 80s. And then doing the comics, it kind of came, it wasn't really like a direct line, hey, I want to do comics. The comics came as a part of the business that I was running doing the custom airbrushing, where I decided I wanted to just come out with a promotional item to promote my store. And it was my brother and I were running the store at the time. And then we decided to, you know, just go full-time on the comics and just hung up the airbrushing so then we could focus on the comics. So, you know, there's a lot more details than that, but that's generally how I got started.
Okay, and were there any, was there any influencers or any inspiration when you were a child to get into graphic design?
Yeah, and it came from a lot of different angles. I mean, first and foremost, it was from within my family. And my brother, he'll probably, I think he's supposed to be calling in too, my brother Guy, who does the writing for the book. I have an older brother who just passed away last year, but he was one of my original inspirations for animation because he used to do stop motion animation. Like when I was in kindergarten, he was like seventh grade, and he used to do the stop motion animations on the floor in the basement. And I used to want to try to draw like him, and ironically, he kind of moved away from drawing and was more left-brained with the mathematics and moved into engineering and science. But, you know, after that, you know, I did have my share of drawing from comic books, copying out of comic books, but I also created my own comics, which I still have. I still have my old books from third grade that I created. And I was always on that kick from an early age of creating like my own heroes that look like me, you know, and I think part of that came from the influence from my father and my mother. My father was more of a community activist and a researcher. He did books on the black family. He had a publication called Black Family Rituals. So my father was associated with a lot of people. Like, he brought people through the house like Dr. Malefe Asante and Dr. Lynn Jeffries was an associate of his. And
excuse me, Dawood, I believe we have your brother on the line. If either of you are on speakerphone, please don't put it on speakerphone because it's causing distortion and it's not allowing our listeners to just get the most from our conversation, okay?
Gotcha.
Okay. Guy Sims, are you on the line as well?
I'm on the line.
Okay. And thank you for joining us on the Gist of Freedom.
Thank you.
It sounds like your family, or at least both of you, had an entrepreneurial spirit, along with an ability to put a comic book in place through art and writing. You had a story you mentioned. Talk a little bit about where your entrepreneurial spirit came from at such an early age.
Well, like I was saying, that kind of leaned more towards my father's side. My mother was more, and this is Dawood speaking, from my perspective, I got more of the creative drive from my mother, who was a pianist, and, you know, her sisters and all that used to come down to the house and sing and do all those types of things. And my father was more of the, you know, control what you do. Whatever you produce, you know, my father didn't draw or do anything really creative. Like I said, he's more of a researcher, and his thing was try to own what you create. Like whatever it is you're going to do, you know, just try to do your best to put out something that's meaningful, something that, because, you know, when you create something, it's don't just haphazardly create something and just throw it out there. If you have a talent and a skill, you should, you should think in terms of community building. What's the purpose of it? What point is it serving? And then for you yourself, are you giving it away, or are you going to reap the benefits of that which you created? So, you know, we've been learning, you know, that's kind of been in the home since we were really young. You know, since my father did those publications, you know, I was in sixth grade. I did the cover for his Rites of Passage for Black Youth book. And so, you know, so I've always been kind of helping out. He kind of been teaching me at an early age, you know, how to work along with the family and do your and do our own thing. So
I
was going to ask for Guy's perspective in terms of not only sharing with our listeners his involvement with your collaboration, which I'm assuming is just the comic book or may extend beyond that. Guy, why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yeah, good evening, everyone. My name is Guy Sims, brother of Dawood. And, yes, our collaboration has gone as far back, just like when he said he was in sixth grade when he did the cover of the Black Family Rituals. But we also collaborate on some of the earliest Kwanzaa books. When Kwanzaa hit the East Coast in, like, 68 or something like that, my father, he jumped right on it, and he thought this was something that was worth our look and worth our family to be participants. And so,
and how old were you? How old were you both at that time?
Man,
mid-60s, late-60s.
Oh, no. That was like, let me see. We started Kwanzaa at our house around 68, so I was about 7, so Dawood had to be about 4 or 5 or something like that.
Wow.
And
so you grew up in a very highly community and conscious household.
Yes. And then I think it was 83 or 84, around that time we had the Black Family Ritual, not the Black Family Ritual, the Kwanzaa Handbook, because people used to always say, how do you do Kwanzaa around the house? And people still do to this day. But we collaborated with our father on that. Dawood did the cover, and I helped do the text. And then we did almost the very first children's book on Kwanzaa, the Kwanzaa Kids Learn the 7 Principles. And that was a Dawood Guy operation right there. And so we've always done things together, whether it was, you know, on the very serious end or just, you know, just brothers sitting around the house messing around. So, and then when the comic book came around, it was just a natural extension of everything we've always done. So that wasn't a stretch to what are we going to do. It was just what are we doing. But the mechanism was already there.
And so, when did the first comic book launch?
We started the process of brainstorming it in, like, November 89, and we went into production in January of 90, and then we introduced it at the Black Expo New York on April 7th, 1990. So that's when the first books actually were introduced to the public, and everything just took off from there.
Hmm. Now, is that how you made your transition into other projects? Again, I know that you've worked with some notable TV networks like MTV and TNT. I know that you were also on Arsenio Hall. Why don't you share a little bit of that realm of your work?
Well, the Arsenio piece, what happened was once the book first came out in 1990, that it started a whole media storm, you know, because this is before there were any black comic conventions. There were very few independent black comic publishers at the time, and it was more of a, like, we were basically kicking down the doors at that time, because we were dealing with a lot of the stress and pressures that were being launched against our company. However, the first year that we came out, you know, it caught the attention of Arsenio Hall, because we were getting a lot of media coverage from CNN, Dallas Morning News, San Francisco Chronicle, Philadelphia newspapers. So then Arsenio, we weren't actually on his show, but he talked about the book in about a minute and a half monologue, which is actually on our website. You can go to brothermancomics.com and you can see clips, video clips. We have some of the historical ones up there. And then that led to eventually America's Most Wanted, with John Walsh. They did a 5-minute spot on us, and that really catapulted it as well, because that was their first time ever doing. They said it was like one of their first positive stories that had
first
to do
and
with
on, first and only.
Right.
It seems like first and only.
Yeah, positive stories about a crime fighter in the city, and they felt that the story behind Brother Man was just as significant, where they felt it was worth a salutation on America's Most Wanted. And then, you know, we have a lot of media
covers that we just had archived at the Auburn Avenue Research Library here in Atlanta. So we have so
Is that where you both
covers.
Are now?
I'm in Atlanta now, and guys.
I'm in Virginia.
Okay, but you both grew up in New York City.
In Philadelphia.
Philadelphia.
Oh, okay, close enough, close enough. Well, let's talk about the inspiration for your comic book. Because, again, you're right, it was breakthrough, especially at that time. I know now there are several other black comic books, so to speak, but, again, it's sort of like an underground versus mainstream. But
right.
What was your goal? What did you hope to achieve with Brother Man, Dictator of Discipline? And talk a little bit about the characters who are part of that series.
Well, I'll jump in. This is Guy.
Okay, Guy.
I think when we first started, everything was new, and I think it was more of a parody of what we saw in comic books, and said, let's make something a little different. You know, it was just fun. We're getting ready for the Black Expo. But I think after that first book came out, but the first book wasn't silly. It still, we knew it had to be good. We knew that people were going to read it, and so, you know, we came with that perspective. But it wasn't like we were trying to break into the comic book market like maybe some other people do. They want to go head-to-head, or at least try to make a foray into the world of Marvel and DC and all like that. We're doing our own thing. But I think once we saw... I'll say for me, once, you know, I saw the responses from people reading the book, and people didn't read the book, I don't think, like your usual comic book. I mean, they were reading it like it was like a roadmap to somewhere, and this just happens to be the illustrated version of a self-help book or a culture guide or something like that. People were really reading it, and it had a whole lot of meaning for them. And we just looked at it as, once again, here's an extension of all the things that we learned in our home growing up, of what you put out there is important, and it does impact people. I'm not one to subscribe where people say, you know, it just doesn't matter. It's funny. Things do matter to somebody when they read it, that people do take things to heart. And so once we saw that was happening, we said, wow, this is – and anyone who's read the book, you can see it from the first two issues. There was a kind of like almost like a shift in, okay, now we kind of know we have something. And the book really, I'll say, by once we got to episode 3, I mean, we were really putting the pedal to the metal and moving in that direction.
And what was your overall goal in producing the comic book series? Did you hope to inspire? Did you hope to simply inform? Did you hope to uplift? Was that really predetermined before you actually started your comic book series, or did you sort of grow as it evolved?
I think it kind of quasi-evolved, but I think, like I said, it's an extension of the things that we've always done. So it wasn't like we sat down and said, you know, we're going to write a book, and when people read this, their families are going to get better, and their kids are going to want to read, and they're going to want to be more creative. You know, it was never that conversation. We just said we knew it was going to impact people. We always say they're going to see something they've never seen before. And if you see something you've never seen before, it does open your eyes to what you know, and it opens your eyes to the possibilities of things to come. And so that I'll say that's what. If there was anything we did sit around, just, we're going to show people something never seen before. Right now, we're working on the graphic novel, and I've said this to Dawood. I'm not a braggart or anything, but you know, I got to a certain point, and I said to Dawood and other colleagues down there in Atlanta, I said, "This is going to be it. This is going to turn the tables in the comic book world. I can guarantee it." I won't say we're going to get the BET Honors Award, but we're going to get people are going to. It's going to be a shocker. It's really going to rock the foundation.
Without taking the whole Black Panther out the bag, why are you going to shock the world when you release it?
I say because it goes back to that statement. People are going to see something that one they haven't seen before, and you know I write in pretty much solitude. I just sit and I start writing. Dawoo tends to do a lot more collaboration with the other artists. I know he does stuff in solitude too, but when I shared things with him and I got their reaction, I said, I think that's the, you know, sometimes you say that's the reaction I kind of want, and then when they give it to you, it's even more than what you expected. I said, they're going to see, people are going, when they pick this up, they're going to see something and say, you know, it's 2011. Where has this been? And that's
okay.
That's just my sitting in my little off basement office saying that.
Okay, so now let's appease our listeners. Let's give them a little taste. Share with us an example of what you're going to produce with this next project that hasn't been seen before. Because we're being a little bit vague, we're being a little bit broad, and sure, that's cool from a marketing standpoint to get people excited. But, again, we're going to rock the world and shock the world. So share with us a little bit about some of the details as to how we're going to accomplish this. For instance, is this for young readers, this upcoming project, or is this simply to enlighten all of us, irregardless of age?
Let me say my part, and I'll let Dawoo jump in, get his piece in. But I'll say it does reach all ages. It is kind of multi-level in people receiving it. But I'll put it like this. In mainstream books, in mainstream television, in mainstream movies, our image, the African-American image, is very one-dimensional. I sometimes call our characters universal orphans because we tend not to have any life other than the life that happens in our surrounding. We're that friend, we're that coworker, and everyone else has a life. You don't know much more about us. I think just the simple fact that we get to explore our characters' lives, how people get to their point, you know, their highs and their lows, I think, once again, that's something people almost never see. As one who consumes almost as much as the media as anybody else, but that's something I always see.
Mm-hmm.
I think
so. Now let's talk about. Okay, so let's. I don't want to give away too much because we want people to pull the pants out the bag too. Okay.
Right.
Who are some of your more popular characters who are part of your comic book series?
Okay. Go ahead.
You want me?
Go ahead.
Well, the main character is Antonio Valor, who is Brother Man. He's an attorney by day. Well, you know, that's pretty much his day job, and he's also the main character, Brother Man. And there's also Melody Rich, who's his co-worker. She's another attorney. Duke Denham, who's the DA. And there's pretty much a whole myriad of characters. I mean, we have so many characters in the series, and I think one of the things, like what Guy's touching on with the graphic novel, is that from 1990 to 95, we did 11 issues. Between those 11 issues, we sold about 750,000 books independently. So there's a fan base that was already impacted by the book and already grew up on the book. So sometimes when people say, is Brother Man good for kids, they ask the question in front of men who were kids when they bought it, who actually answered the question for me and say, I grew up on Brother Man. Which actually feels good for me because I say this book it was designed for family by a family. So we were always coming with that mind state that this book is for families. But at the same time, Guy and I, we also, you know, we're fans of adventure, action, things that make sense. Not just, you know, let's make something positive and, you know, just hitting people over the head. Hey, do good in school. Sit down and read, you know. Kids, they can tell the difference between that and just wanting to watch something that's just action-packed. It's something that takes
you
to another place, another adventure. So with Brother Man, what we did, we created our own mythological city called Big City, which is a metaphor of any city USA, but you could tell it's heavily influenced on, you know, New York City, Philly, and stuff like that. And one of the stereotypes that we broke with the book is that this city is, you know, it's an all-black universe. It's a universe consisting of our people.
like saying like a mythological Lagos, Nigeria or something like that, where we're dealing with ourselves. That's one thing the fans like that they haven't seen before. Second of all, we're dealing with a lot of things that are over the top, but we're showing the city as a dimensional city, not a one-dimensional ghetto. A lot of times when we think of black people in the city, we think ghetto, but when we think of white people or Asian people in the city, we think wealth, trading.
Neighborhood.
You know, you think of New York City, neighborhood,
right.
But us is hood. But with
right.
Big city is that. It's a city. So we deal with the paper pushers in City Hall. We deal with those who have the finances. We deal with those who are struggling. We deal with those who are in love, those who are seeking love, those who have been maybe stabbed in the back and rejected and feeling lonely, those who feel full and happy. You know, and that's the thing that people were getting out of Brother Man, that they said, wow, this makes me think of my family. This is real. So we were changing that description of real being, you know, that person who's been shot 5 times. Well, yeah, that's real. But also somebody, you know, just seeing a girl you like and being afraid to speak to her. You know, everybody's not a pimp player type. Some guys are just a little shy and want to talk to a girl. So we
show
those.
Here's a good segue. You know, you talk about keeping it real. Have you guys considered doing a comic book that is actually based on a famous or historical figure, real figure, like a Thurgood Marshall or like a Obama or like a Johnny Cochran or, you know, Frederick Douglass? Have you guys dabbled or at least thought about introducing something like that so that you can, in many ways, connect a lot of our young readers or younger readers with a slice of history, a broader perspective of famous African Americans?
Do you mean for the series that we're working on or for something in itself? Because there was a series in the past called Golden Legacy Comics, and Golden Legacy was out in the 60s where they did historical
exactly
comics.
I vaguely remember that.
Actually, I learned a lot about Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass from reading those books. And I think with what we're doing now, it's like Brother Man it's a vanguard for Big City Entertainment, which is a company. Like our objective is not to just make a comic book, but to build an entity. And when you create an entity, you'll have Brother Man Comics, which has to be it has to maintain what it is. So if it's a mythological city and you put Obama in there, it's no longer mythological. It's now reality, and how did Obama get there, and how do you tie him to this world? So that world has to be what it is. Now, if you come out with a comic that's timely or a comic that's about somebody else, that has to be at the point where, okay, now you have a company that rivals a company like Marvel, where you have the resources to hire all the artists that you need to have 5-10 different titles going at once. But what it is at this point, we have to stay focused on what it is that we're creating, because there's a lot of great ideas of things that we can do, but it diffuses your energy when you prematurely try to do everything else, when right now Brother Man is working, and that's the thing that's building the foundation for everything else to stand on.
Market, right. Entrepreneurial note. Market penetration and market development. You do one thing well, and then you let that thing allow you to create other things. Gentlemen, it's been a true honor to have both of you with us.
We thank you.
A few things. What do you hope that readers take from your comic book series? And then I'd like you to also give our listeners your contact information.
Okay, well, I'll start and then wrap it up with Dawood. What I'd like to see is two things. One, that we develop a product that people can be, you know, not only proud of, but something that they want to continue to embrace and find some meaning in their own life from it. But secondly, that it would show people that there are avenues to express yourself. You don't have to wait for someone else to provide your image to anyone else. You have total control of who you are and how you want to project yourself.
Yeah,
well,
I would actually, yeah, I think I pretty much touched on it, because I was going to say, like, you know, we have, actually our website is brothermancomics.com, and there you can see more about learn more about the company. We have a lot of YouTube clips up there. We have a Facebook fan forum, Brother Man fan forum. And also we have a traveling Brother Man art show called Drawing from the Soul, the official Brother Man art exhibition, which right now is at this on display at Virginia Tech. And I'll be doing a presentation on Tuesday at Virginia Tech at 7. So, you know, a lot of information is at the site.
Beautiful. Well, I want to thank both of you for being a part of tonight's show. It's always inspiring to know there are good souls like you who are doing meaningful work, not just with our young people, but for all of our people. And I wish you continued successes in what I would suggest is going to be a very colorful and meaningful career.
Correct.
And in closing, I would like to simply share with all of us to let's remember to also share our rich history and heritage with our children, so that we instill in them a greater level of self-identity, greater levels of self-esteem, and in that reality, greater opportunities to believe, achieve, and succeed. Thank you all for listening to The Gift of Freedom is Faith. Good night and great blessings.
Good night.